Pleasure to introduce again Professor Prabhavati Reddy, who's our Shibda Sani Fellow for this term. And today is giving the first of her seminars on the, as far as I understood, on the work you have done on the book, this book here, in the pilgrimage, Shifting Patterns of Worldview of Sri Shaila in South India. And so today she'll be talking to us about the Tantric Mandala of Sri Shaila Temple, the religious world of Shaivas and Shaktas.
Okay, in my last lecture, actually, some of you were not there, I introduced to the most famous Vaishnava pilgrimage center called Tirupati, Tirumala, and I talked about the sacred images and the materiality issues concerned with, and how materiality plays a role in the formation of narrative traditions, etc., etc. So today I am going to introduce you again another famous Shaiva pilgrimage center in South India. It's called Sri Shailam. So when I wrote this book, actually right now in second book I'm writing a sequence to this one. And because at the time I kind of more focused on the broad-based Shaiva religious culture, that is Martha, Pauranika, combined with a little bit Shaiva Siddhanta, Agamic tradition, that is what practiced in the 15th century and also now, the contemporary times now. And so I was more focused on that and also dealt to some extent on the Shaiva sectarian traditions, Atimarga traditions, and including Mantra Marga, Kapalikas too. But in order to give a sense of historical development of traditions, so I did that. But I was looking actually, basically I did a survey of Atimarga traditions at that time. And I didn't even touch the Pashupata, Lakula, because I don't have much evidence there. But now I am convinced, in this second book, I am going to do one introductory chapter on the connecting Pashupata, Lakula, to all the way Kapalika, Kalamukha, continuation at the site, because I was not comfortable at that time. Even now, we do not have primary sources, but because based on the religious practices and the way we see the continuity from the all the way Pashupata, Lakula. And there is enormous, literature also, not literature, but material culture and also in the surrounding regions of Sri Shaila. So, we have to look in the broader context also, what is happening in this region. Considering all that, I didn't do that time. So now, in this book, second book, I'm going to do Tantra, Siddha, and Yoga traditions. Those are the three things. And whoever practiced these traditions, whether Mantra Marga or Atimarga or Shaiva and Shakta, whoever practiced these, whatever communities, So that I am going to do in this second book, and so this is going to be the part of the lecture, Tantric Mandala of Sri Shailam Temple. Why I am calling Tantric Mandala, because when I published sometime back a article in Artistry Journal, this is not working. Okay, we are kind of fast. Our minds are fast now. Machines are slow down,
Exactly.
So we push and push and they don't cooperate. But we think they are not cooperating. But we don't have patience. Okay. So where were I lost my thread.
Tantric Mandala. Tantric Mandala.
Oh, Tantric Mandala. So when I published an article, I called it visual text, a Purana text. I will talk about that, and now I am calling Tantric Mandala, that is another, looking at artistry, art historical representations from Tantric and Adimarga point of view or Siddha traditions point of view. So another dimension I am taking. So anyway, so introduction, briefly we'll go over Sri Shailam. Generic term actually, sacred mountain is the Sri Shailam. In the old days, it was called Sri Parvata. Again, another generic term. Parvata means mountain. But that is the way it became known as throughout the history of 2000 years. This site has a long history. And it was called Shiva, Mountain of Shiva, and Goddess Durga. And And so, when you see in the South Indian map there, where it is located is north of Chennai, because most people know Tamil Nadu south and Chennai and Tirupati, you can see there. It's a the mountain, actually this is like an island mountain. On the, in the right picture you see, the mountain is almost like crescent shaped, and Krishna River flows around the mountain and giving like a broad crescent sweeps. It's almost like, looks like it also described as island mountain. That's the way it is, like, you know, you see the Krishna on three sides. On the fourth side there is a torrent, and you know, now the of course, based on the topography, also the sacred geography developed, and that is not our topic of today. So when you go to Srishailam, it's located in the midst of the mountains. It's not an easy thing. In the old days, there was no transportation, and people used to go by all kind of three types of the transportation they used to use. Now there is a bus transportation. You take from Hyderabad or other city, you know, go there in few hours. And but that's where the located, the mountain where it is located, that is about like a city is located, a town maybe, a medium-sized town, about 20-30 miles radius maybe. Now it's expanding, becoming more popular pilgrimage center. But in the literature, in the Sanskrit literature, it has a Mahatmya text called Srishaila Khanda, and it talks about this Srishaila Mahakshetra, the greater Kshetra, actually expanding or extending beyond this mountain, and extending beyond the mountain terrace, terrain, and into the plateau. So almost 270 mile radius. So that is called Mahakshetra. And this Mahakshetra is conceptualized as a lotus mandala in the Srishaila Khanda, and it's called eight petal mandala, Astadala Padma. And so this is the, you know, innovation of Saiva Siddhantins, who conceptualized the great this Kshetra as a lotus mandala, eight petal, based on the, they constructed this concept based on the Siddhanta theology of Ashtamurti form of Shiva. And so, and then they created a lotus journey. It's a beautiful, you know, and again, that is again reflects the Saiva Siddhanta idea of the Shiva Sadashiva, both, you know, five functions and two functions of creation, reabsorption, constantly, you know, this moment. So it's a beautiful, you know, if you want to, you can read in there, in the book I talked about. So this is the lotus mandala. And it is the uniqueness also. It participates in the two pan-Indian traditions, that is Jyotirlinga, the column of light, or fiery column of light, Shiva. And that is the pan-Indian myth, speaks of Shiva taking this self-manifestation of Linga, and that is the beginning of the sea in the worship of Linga on the earth, and etc., etc. So there are such, 12 Jyotirlinga shrines are identified with this pan-Indian myth. And Srishailam is the second of the 12. And so that is the one pan-Indian. Another one is Devi is also, the Durga here, is also included as a Shaktipita, one of the Shaktipita shrines. So that is another uniqueness both. As far as early history concerned, that this is a great source. It starts with the Mahabharata, Aranya Parva, and Tirtha Yatra section, where this forest exile, you know, the Tirthas, these Pandavas took the circular journey of India, actually. So the sage Pulastha was, you know, explaining this greatness of all these Tirthas, and he talks about this Sri Parvata, why Sri Parvata, and he talks, maybe there are a few verses, but it gives a lot of insights, you know, that helps us later on what happened in the site, you know. He talks about one Devahuda Tirtha site, and that is the gives us idea of purification of minds. People were, gives the benefit of purification of minds. That helps us thinking of ascetic communities and sannyasa communities, stay there or living there, or working on the, you know, yoga path, or some kind of. And another idea it is also gives is Srauta Vaidika Dharma practice, referring to the horse, Ashwamedha sacrifice, horse sacrifice. So, In any way, in the early history, we lived a few centuries in the common era, the site was actually, you know, patronized by both, you know, these kingdoms, Satavahana and Ikshvakus, and they patronize the Shaivism, and they also part patronize the Shrauta, Vaidika sacrifices, etc. So that helps us, like, you know, Mahabharata kind of. And so from there, by the 10th century, it was growing as a famous pilgrimage center, becoming pan-Indian level, and pan-Indian, associating the pan-Indian mythology or pan-Indian Shaiva traditions. And then it remained regionally distinctive. It has its own Telugu narrative literature. It has its own Telugu sensibilities, whether poetry, whether Siddhanta you call, or mythology, localized myths. So it has its own regional distinctive aspect to it. And in the Srishaila Khanda, as said that, like in Siddhanta and the theological traditions, how soteriology is important, the goal and objective of the path, and the pilgrimage traditions also, there is a soteriology goal developed in all pilgrimage. So Srishailam says, you know, I will read one shloka from the Srishaila Khanda. It says, Kedarasya Udakam Pitva Varanasya Mrutasya Cha Srishailam Shikaram Drushtva Punarjanma Navindati. It says that it clubs together with two famous North Indian sites, Kedara up in the Himalayas and the Varanasi, the most famous Shaiva city of India. So clubbing together, what it says is sipping water or drinking water at Kedara, dying in Varanasi, and also seeing the Shikara, you know, now the about Sri Parvata, seeing or darshana of the mountain peak itself release one from rebirth cycle, you know. Seeing the darshan is important here again. The whole mountain is seen as a self-manifestation of a linga, you know. Later Telugu literature, in 13th century literature, we see that, you know, the poets are talking about. So, now the Smartha Puranic religious culture, what is the broad-based culture, whether Vaishnava, you take Shakta, whether you take temple, or you take Shaiva temple, that is what, you know, they preferred, because it is all-inclusive and non-sectarian. That is always, it's what is called now, some scholars are calling lay Shaivism, lay Vaishnavism. Not completely lay people, but they are also intellectuals, you know, who practice this religion, Smartha Puranic religion. So, again, on the other hand, Shaiva sects, who are sects of initiation, exclusive to people who are initiated into the, who have a guru, and that is like, you know, Atimarga sects. So, our focus is today, Atimarga sects, and one from Kapalika, the Mantra Marga sect, Mantra Marga branch. This is what you say, you know, so much renovation I went to. I started a research for 20 years I have been doing. Every time I go, and every time I find something new. Pilgrimage place, that is what happens. You don't see what you saw last time, you know, sometimes, you know. So, the temple was renovated, and now, last time I went, it was already golden plated, there's a tower, you know. So, every time there are some changes. That is what you see, Srishailam temple complex. That is a Mallikarjuna. And that is the linga. As you see, the linga is not a man-made linga. It is called Bana linga. Bana lingas are naturally found. And Srishailam is again famous for this Bana lingas. People used to come from other places, collect for Bana lingas and take back to their temples and establish it. So it has its own. Naturally formal lingas have their own unique and considered uniconic lingas are considered. Like something salagramas, like, you know. So that is Durga, Brahmaramba, but that is not her original appearance. I will show you later on. She is called Brahmaramba, Mother Devi. She is under the decorations. Her original appearance is covered. Why? I will talk about that later on. Now, so now we are moving into this focus. What is our focus is? I briefly touch this Shaiva and Shakta traditions, Atimarga. They are called Atimarga, Ati, beyond, extending beyond what was fourfold Varnashrama Dharma or Ashrama Dharma that is given in the Hindu, you know, conventional system. A student, householder, and Vanaprastha and Sannyasa. But these guys go beyond the fifth ashrama, Siddhashrama it is called. That's why they are Ati, going beyond, transcending. not only transcending the four ashrama system, they also transcend in every way, do opposite to what was prescribed in the Vaidika and Shravata, and they just stand starkingly opposite to the Shravata Smarta Marga systems. So the Pashupata, Lakula sometimes often club together same, and I don't need to go history of that, but what we have here is Pashupata Shaivism might have practiced early centuries, like maybe I would think like a 5th century onward, and just still kind of some questions are needs to be explored. And then Pashupata, Lakula, maybe for 5th to 6th, 7th centuries. And then they were kind of Kapalika begin to appear from the 7th or 8th centuries based on the Sanskrit literature. We have Malati Madhava, Banas, Kadambari, and other sources. And other sources from Telugu literature, they speak of the Kapalika cultic practices. So third is the Kapalika. And then Kapalika dissolved into Kalamukha. And the, now the Kalamukha, Kapalika are seen as one. So there is a continuation. But in the continuation, there is a rupture. Of course, breakup, because Pashupata Sutras and other Sivasasana teachings are taught, and by the time Lakula seen as a teacher, sometimes teacher of Pashupata tradition, and so there is something that is going on. So the practices, and the practices, they differ. But what I understood is now, in all traditions, Panchabrahmanas plays very important. Panchabrahmanas are the the five aspects of Shiva, that is the Shiva's totality, in close total totality, that is. So in Pashupatas, when they worshipped Shiva in Brahmanas, mantras point of view, and by the time you go to Kapalika, they started using mantras and invocation, mantra invocation to deities, and Kapalikas are more innovative in a way, because they introduced all the images, and especially very ferocious forms of images of Shiva and goddess are introduced. Kalamukhas are more closer to Lakula. We have inscriptions from 10th century, 12th until 12th century. There are two monasteries played a very important role at Srishailam, and there are abbots of monasteries, and they were also served as Rajagurus, royal preceptors to both the regional dynasties, Kakatiyas and Chalukyas. So in the Karnataka neighboring region, the Kalamukhas more stronger, more. It is where that's where it developed and extended to the Andhra region. So that is the Kalamukhas. Kalamukhas clearly say inscriptions. We follow the Lakula Siddhanta, and they are following all ascetic. The more stress is tapas and ascetic practices, austerities, all kinds of. So inscriptions clearly say that they are coming from the Kapakaka Lakula. When the Lakula is there, Pashupata is there in a connection. I can see that now. And as you all know, Sanderson have done wonderful, great work. Very laborious work on the textual traditions of Shaivism and Shakta. Now is continuing. It's amazing work, and it is difficult before that. Who is who, what is what, because of the syncretism, and it was very difficult. And now we can see that at least based on these categories. And what he says is the earliest canon, Niswasa canon, that was the earliest. Before branching off this Kati Marga and Panta Marga, Niswasa contained all the materials, both the tradition, both branches. So what he says is that we look at how when they branched off, they have their own scriptural canon and practices also, individualized practices developed. Now, so the Veerashaiva is not seen here as a part of, because it's a specializer. It's not seen as Atimarga. But they claim that they are coming from Pashupata. You always in India, what is the oldest, they always try to claim, But Veerashaiva is seen as a specialized community. I did talk in some length about Veerashaivas in the book. Now, Siddhanta, we are not talking, the Shaiva Siddhanta, most publicly presented religion, Smartha, Agama tradition, and temple network was established by these acharyas and these abbots, and they were also royal preceptors. They knew how to, kind of extend their, practices. I think because of them, abbots especially, They played a great role in the Siddhanta tradition, in the Tamil South, what is called Southern Saiva Siddhanta, and in Andhra region also, that is what it is practiced. But they also have the Pancha Brahmana, Pancha Mukhalinga, they worship Pancha Mukhalinga. You can see that, you know, consistently certain Saiva teachings are doctrinal, you know, concepts or ideologies are continuously same, except with many changes, of course, I mean, that is always there. And the non-Saiddhantika traditions, Kapalika and Kavala go together, again, from within the Kapalika cultural milieu, Kavala developed later on, and introduced more, you know, the Shakta-oriented or goddess. This is where we see in the Kapalika cultural milieu, a fusion of goddesses and with the Shaiva. It is from there takes off Shakta, the beginning to rise, and now Sanderson also claimed there might be an independent Shakta tradition might have existed, and I believe that strongly, looking at the southern context, I don't know, I am not sure. But anyway, right now, we are right here, Shakta and Shaiva Shakta oriented. Looking at my, you know, his categories, Sanderson categories, I kind of, it is difficult sometimes to identify your material, culture, your artifacts, your monastery, what is going on in a southern pilgrimage center, and comparing to the, you know, Sanskrit textual traditions. It's a challenging task. You don't get all these comparisons nicely carved out there. So all kinds of irregularities. But based on that, I came conclusion, in a way, at least tentative conclusion, Vama practice was there early on. The Vama, the Yamala deities and Saptamatruka, Seven Matruka cult was there, and other deities were there. And then eventually Dakshina developed, the southern transmission, and that was introduced a little later into the Durga temple, combining with the Tripura Sundari cult, now what is called popularly Sri Vidya tradition, and that was introduced by the Shankaracharyas of Sringeri, either Kanchi. But that's what they say, that they establish a Sri Chakra, the goddess temple. Pachin Mamnaya is a Western tradition. I came to realize that the Kundalini cult, Kundalini technique was used by these so many Siddhas. You know, in Siddhas, there are four types of Siddhas. Maheshwara Siddhas, they usually call, but I'm not going to Siddhas. That's my fourth lecture, you know. But, you know, different yoga techniques were used. Kundalini, I'm convinced right now, because 15th century text talks about these Naths were using the Kundalini combined with their Hatha Yoga technique, you know. So I am convinced of that, you know, before also Kundalini practice was there. And so, but, tentatively, I am putting forward that, you know, these, the Shaiva Shakta traditions, particularly might have been, you know, affiliated or, you know, embraced these traditions. Now, the Prakara Mandala of Sri Shailam temple, that is the Prakara outer enclosure actually to the temple. This is about by 500 by 500 feet, you know, east to west, 600 feet by 600 north to south. So this is the Prakara built at one point in maybe 13th century. The reliefs are carved later on, you know. In faces, it's not a completed art monument. So, two things, you know, I called visual Purana text because they gave her every possible, you know, aspect of Shaiva, Shakta, worldview, whether you take a religious history, mythology, religious practices, devotees, saints, or, you know, there is a, again, you know, a wide variety of themes are covered. It's almost like a written text on stone, you know, and Longhurst, you know, the British archaeologist, he is the one who visited, two Europeans visited the Sri Shailam. In 1798, Colin McKenzie visited, think about it, 1798. He traveled all kinds of transportation. He finally reached by horse. He wrote there is a small article in Asiatic Researches. You know, somebody wrote, you know, his field work, I think notes, somebody wrote, finally published it. And then second European visited Longhurst, archaeologist, who did a lot of archaeological work in India, And he wrote an article, you know, on this. And he said, when you look at this prakara, he said, it is like a library and a museum rolled into one. It is a library. It's a wealth of data is there. And it's a museum. It's a display. Now it's changed. It does not look like this. You know, this is a wall, a east wall. It does not look like that. Because pilgrimage place center became very popular. They built all these railings around, you know, how the, you know, they built all, they do all kinds of things in. I don't know how many of you went to pilgrimage places, you know, for their own, you know, to facilitate needs of the pilgrims, I think, you know. They built railings and all that, you know, now the, thank God I did, like, you know, these videos and photographic, everything. And so it took me almost 6 weeks to document the reliefs. You know, it was like 15 years ago. Anyway, so why I'm calling Tantric Mandala? Yes. And, okay, the artist presented a worldview of Shaivas and Shaktas, one thing, of course, and they documented basically religious history. And the second thing, they followed an iconography program with a specific, you know, the bow, you can see on the left and the four major gateways, cardinal directions. And they used this Bhairavas, Ashtabhairavas concept. And they, you know, it was already a kind of Smartha, kind of Shaiva Siddhanta and Puranic temple. But they deliberately used Bhairava because conventional Hinduism, Bhairava is not accepted, Smartha culture. You know, because Bhairava is an outsider, I will talk about that later on. But here, Ashtabhairavas they used, and also they juxtaposed bottom, at the bottom faces Bhairava and on the top Durga. So they created an iconographic kind of mandala, emphasizing this is the Bhairava, emphasizing the prominence of Bhairava and Bhairava cultic practices, because to begin with, the site had strong hold, stronghold of Kapalika cult. And so on the south, I just showed that they created a mandala. We don't have much time, so I really have to go faster a little bit. So the mandala created, they started with the Puranic mandala symbolism, you know, the Naga, the serpent, and the, you know, they established like Sri Shailam is the connecting center or what is called Axis Mundi. Axis Mundi, connecting center between the netherworlds and the earth and the heavens. So the mandala symbolism is connected anyway. So that is all. So you can see the shrine, the nearest eastern entrance is actually Bhairava. You can see that there are his adepts even meditating on him. And you know, on the label, what they wrote, Veerabhadra they wrote. Intentionally, they know the Bhairava and Veerabhadra who is. But intentionally, they wrote Veerabhadra because they cannot remove the sculpture. So that is what they, you know, what happens in Smartha or Anikata. Always this, you know, confrontation and, you know, acceptance problem, you know. And the southeast corner, especially artist, this one I chose because he is called Kala Bhairava. Bhairava is seen behind, you know, is a deity of dissolution. When the dissolution is taking place, he is the one there, stand behind the time. Is called Kala Bhairava, you know. Time even exists when the Bhairava is there in the according to Shaiva tradition. And the Naga Yantra, classically interesting, Kundalini and endless Naga Yantra, I think something to do with Kundalini practice or some esoteric practice. So he intentionally put the southeast corner is Agneya, Agni, the fire, dissolution is the fire, you know. And the Kala Bhairava is represents the fire. His hair is always saying like a, you know, fire in flames, like in aqua, you know. So anyway, they emphasize that symbolism. Now the Shaiva Shakta oriented cultic practices. So anyway, the Bhairava cult is no problem. We have established, we have lot of Bhairava caves are there, you know, surrounding Sri Shailam, Bhairava statues there. So even until 17th, 18th, 19th century, maybe there are the tribal peoples, Chenchus, they might have practiced, their deity might be the Bhairava. And so we have lot of material evidence and literature evidence. I don't need to go again, repeat that. Malati Madhava talks about this Kapala Kundala and Agora Ganta, the Kapalikas. And Sri Shailam seems to have connection with Ujjaini, another major Kapalika center in the central India. There's something going on, they have connections. So Agora Ganta Kapala Kapala, the teacher, and they are looking for Deva. The Malati Madhav, basically they want to sacrifice the Malati, the heroine, to the Durga actually, you know. So Chamunda. So this is a animal sacrifices. And so the difference between the earlier Pashupata and Lakula is there is a Atna Parityaga is there, you know, self sacrifice, you know, when the four faces of all the prescribed faces completed, Pashupata ascetic, when he sees the Rudra of everything of Rudra, when he had that the consciousness or the awareness of Rudra, then he moves to the cremation ground, and there he remains basically wait for his death, you know, Atma Parityaga. So that is the way it is practiced. But when we come, by the time we come to Kapalikas, they try to practice sacrifice others, not their own, you know. They look for the auspicious people. Even they caught Shankara, the Vedanta philosopher, and we have a nice story. Shankara's Madhavacharya's two biographies, biographies of Shankara. They are a nice story. I talked about this. We don't have much time for that. But anyway, he asks for Shankara's head, you know, and he argues, you know, convinces Shankara. But he uses Vedanta idea against Shankara, you know. And so Shankara is now obligated to offer his own head for Kapalika's, you know, ritual. Anyway, eventually he was killed and all that story ends. But a nice conversation dialogue, Kapalika and Vedanta and Shankara. And he asks, why do you care? You know, it doesn't matter. You say, world is Maya. Why do you care your physical form? Anyway, you are there. Then, you know, he uses, you know, Shankara's ideas against him. He's a smart guy, you know, Agora Ganta. Now, anyway, so that is, we have stories a lot, you know, and Bana talks about this, the Dravida Tantrika, who knows thousands of stories about Sri Parvata, and who knows about the Pashupata Shastra. So we get a lot of this information. So that is, I was not convinced before when I was writing, but now I am convinced that Pashupata was practiced at Sri Shailam, you know. Now, so from the Kapalika Kaula, we have this ferocious goddess, worship of the ferocious goddesses, and it's developed, Kaula Marga developed, and much is attributed to the Machendranath. But here, in our context is, we have Saptamatrika cult, in the temple complex, they still worship. And it's interesting, you know, how they included Saptamatrikas. And Bhairava, Chamunda, outskirts, you know, not in the temple. But village goddess is Chamunda, you know, village goddess of Sri Shailam. So there is definitely mother cult. Because in this region, when you see surrounding region, very Shaiva Shakta, very strong. I would call even Shaiva Shakta belt, you know, very strong, you know. So Yamala Tantras, I'm kind of coming, Sanskrit tradition I'm using. A textual tradition, so Vidyapita, because we have wonderful relief, I'm going to show you. Bhairavi plays a very significant role in the Vidyapita scriptural canon. It is Bhairavi, she teaches the knowledge, wisdom and practice to Bhairava. It's opposite way around. Bhairava Tantras, Bhairava teaches to goddess, but here in the Vidyapita, Bhairavi plays that role. So centrality of the female goddess or goddess cult. So there is a cult of Kameshwari. It goes on, cult of Veerabhadra, Bhadrakali, and, you know, for specific reasons, these deities emerged. It's not like some, you know, all of a sudden they are, but there's specific reason they are Veerabhadra. And so, Shiva Bhairava, Shiva is Bhairava, Brahma inside, Brahmahatya, why Shiva committed Brahmahatya, you know, the beheading of Brahma's, one of the cutting of Brahma's one head, the main head actually. Brahma used to have four heads. Anyway, I am not going into that. We don't have much time. So, but that gave the Mahavrata, the Kapala Vrata, Mahavrata, that was undertaken by these Kapalika's followers. But it is actually Shiva as Bhairava undergoes this 12 years of Kapala Vrata. And it's a very tedious vrata. It's an agony for him. He acts like a madman, fringy and laughing like he has to, because the skull is stuck to his hand, and that is a sin, you know. So Shiva is acts like here, the first of all, he transgresses every convention, cutting off the Brahma's head. And then he follows, set up a rule, Dharma Shastra's rule, that if you do the sin, Brahmahatya, like killing a Brahmin is a very severe crime in ancient India. So he sets up the rules that you have to undergo expiation. Okay, that is what Kapalika Vrata Mahavrata. Finally, he lost his Kapala skull, fell off when he went to the Varanasi, you know. And so this is a way. So myth sometimes. Oh, now second one is Shiva as a Bhikshatana beggar. As part of his Bhairava, another narrative developed. Purana has a lot of different versions. Again, this is also teaches sages who are living in the Dwarka forest, doing all the dharmic things, you know, fire sacrifices, etc., etc. But they forgot the higher path, supreme path, and yoga. What is the supreme path leading the, you know, knowing the Rudra and Shiva and supreme reality, right? So they forgot. They are caught up, they are living with their wives, sort of Dharma Grihastha holder. So he want to teach Pashupata teachings, maybe a revival of Pashupata teachings. So he goes to as a naked beggar and distracts the sages' wives. All kinds of things went and they give him a curse. And so his linga fell off and they give a, this is where the castration of linga, you know, all this wonderful story. So anyway, the idea behind is to teach them Pashupata teachings, okay? So, and Bhairava, as a Bhairava, as a transgressive sacrality, you know, Elizabeth Vishwalingam wrote a wonderful article, how he transgresses in every way, the Varnashrama Dharma or Hindu Dharma or, you know, conventional social values and etc., etc. Sometimes, you know, Wendy Doniger mentioned somewhere, I read, it's a, myths, we should not ignore myths. Myths provide a lot of ground, you know, framework in the middle way, myths. Myths help us to understand sometimes rationalistic theologies here, understand, because they are rational theologies, sometimes they do not provide all the information to, you know. And then on the other hand, myths help us to understand what seems to be irrational cultic practices. When you look at, you know, why Kapalikas were doing all kinds of things, or, you know, why Pashupatas did laughs, madman, why, you don't get it, you know, when you look at, you know, in an outsider. But when you look at these myths in the middle ground, they help us, because he laid out a pattern of behavior for Pashupata ascetics or Kapalikas. When they commit a crime, they are criminals, basically, you know, Bhairava is a criminal, you know, killing the Brahmahatya, you know, anyway. So, anyway, that's the story. Definitely, Bhairava is there on the North Prakara. They proclaimed Bhairava is the Samhara Bhairava, I am calling him, is the standing at the, you know, threshold of the dissolution. Creation is ended. He is also, I am kind of tend to call him Kalarudra. Time is annihilation of Kalarudra, Kalagnirudra in different names. Annihilation of time and also creation. That's what he represents. You can see all the whole body is, carved with the figures, and he stands on the serpent and the netherworld and symbolism. And I wrote some detailed description here, and again, we don't have time. So, the creation and the dissolution are reabsorption of the universe. And it became later on in the very prominently, kind of prominent in the Laya Yoga practice, you know, reabsorption or the dissolution, you know, becomes the very major idea in the construction of the Laya Yoga kind of ideology. So his counterpart, Kali, plays that role, you know, but he is the one major role, but Kali. This is the way we got into with Bhairava, with Kapalikas, Kali, Kula, Kaltar, Yamala, different names, but inclusion of all ferocious goddesses. That sculpture I found last time I went, it was not there a few years ago, and they found somewhere, maybe, and they kind of established near the Mata monastery. See, this is what, you know, you find every time something new. So, Vidyapita, Yamala Tantras, the cult of goddesses, and this is what I am calling Bhairavi, goddess Bhairavi, the teacher of esoteric knowledge and practice. This is a codified language. You can see that. Tantra, how you say Sandhya Bhasha, Here, art also, you know, artist also used a codified language. I will just read that part, how I gave the interpretation. Oh, yes, here. Yeah, this is by Ravi. I'm finally calling her. This before, in my first, in the book I wrote, Tantric Relief. So, the artist skillfully created a cryptogram using a set of symbols to convey the complex religious imagery of Sri Shailam. The decodification of this sculpture helps sort out what each symbol represents and aids in the understanding of the relief's meaning as a whole. The main image is a composite figure fused with a body of goddess shown facing the viewer and the hind of lion shown in profile. She has a bull head. Is that bull head? I'm thinking.
Ram head.
Okay, ram head. Okay, let's call ram head. Ram, anything?
Antelope.
No?
Yeah, that's
antelope. That is closer to Rudra, actually. Yeah, I thought, you know. Okay, anyway. The main image. Now, she has a bull head or ram head with a prominent horns and ears. Her right foot is visibly present in contrast to her demure lion feet. The goddess holds a kalasha parts in her upper hands and a book, you can see the book clearly, and an object in lower hands. She wears a garment with the tassels. Okay, that is a description about her garment in the description. And now, the lion's tail is carved as a long snake, shown looping over the goddess rear, and it appears to the right with its head upright with the bifurcated tongs. A fish is shown suckling milk from the lion's udder. The relief framed above the goddess depicts two water streams flowing from both sides, and each stream contains four fishes. The streams flow into the two parts held by the goddess. The visual space of the relief is filled with the other symbols. Two large human skulls are placed on either side of the goddess. The skulls are almost identical, grinning sarcastically, with globular eyes staring lifelessly from their sockets. They bare their teeth, their tusks are protruded, and a mustache curls down beneath their nostrils. The skulls wear large clipped earrings dangling down to their chins. A dagger is placed adjacent to the skull on the left. The skull on the right is placed in juxtaposition, almost clasped by a snake's head. These symbols convey specific meanings. The lion is the vehicle mount of Goddess Durga and represents her Shakti, energy. The goddess figure with parts of water, fishes and a book represents Bhairavi, ferocious form of Parvati, the goddess of tantras. She is the ultimate source of knowledge and powers, especially the eight siddhis that are symbolized by the eight fishes floating in streams. The fish generally represents an ascetic or siddha who strive to obtain knowledge or powers from the goddess in tantra traditions. Here it specifically represents Machendranath, the first teacher of the Nath tradition, who was said to have received the knowledge of the tantras from the womb of a fish when Shiva was expounding Tantra knowledge to the goddess. The bull head represents Shiva. Now it is a ram head, right? Then I have to think something else. What's the ram symbol symbolizes? The skulls are symbols of Bhairava, the most dreadful form of Shiva, and are also symbols of his Hayana sin, the severing of Brahma's head. The skull of Brahma is stuck to Bhairava's hand, and he wanders the earth carrying the skull as a bowl used for begging for food. The Kapalikas worshipped Bhairava as their supreme god and used skull-shaped bowls for their rituals and other purposes. The dagger is the characteristic symbol of Veerashaivism, and Veerashaiva devotees are invariably shown carrying daggers in their waistbands and hands. And the snake, what to do with the snake? I gave an interpretation. The snake represents the Kundalini energy in the Tantra tradition, and an initiated adept raises this energy within his body from the base chakra or base upward through a series of chakras to unite it with the thousand petal lotus chakra above his skull. The artist shows the movement of the subtle energy symbolically through the progression of the snake passing through the back of the goddess and emerging with his head pointing over the right hand skull. The snake reaching out to the skull indicates the ascent of Kundalini energy to the thousand petal lotus. So that's what my interpretation. I don't know, but I like to hear later on from you if you have any ideas. So anyway, it shows here. This is near the Southern Gateway, near the entrance. Clearly giving the message that Atimarga and Bhairava and Shakta, Shaiva Shakta, and definitely the goddess tradition is strong here. And from here, the I have 10 more minutes. So I am leaving the half an hour for questions and discussions, you know, since this is a seminar. So I think 10 minutes. The cult of mothers, it's very clear, and the seven mothers sculpture is placed in the within the second courtyard, actually. And when I asked why this sculpture is placed, because every other sculpture is dumped in storehouse, and then they said, oh, they are Avarana deities, you know, of Shiva. So once upon a time, either Saptamatrikas were accompanied by the Bhairava or Shiva, or sometimes in the early on, and sometimes there are eight mothers, you know. Yogeshwari was added to the seven, you know. But here, Saptamatrika is the most popular number anyway. So she is honored. Another thing I found out inside, she is honored first before, during the Durga festivals or special festivals. First, Saptamatrikas are honored even before the Durga, you know. That tells us that our earliest origins, they still, you know, kind of recognizes that, you know, as temples early affiliations with these goddesses. And basically, they were identified as named after the seven, you know, male counterparts, male gods, like Brahma, Brahmani, Vaishnavi, Vaishnava, Vaishnu, like that, you know. So, they are called by their male counterparts in names. Actually, these goddesses belong to battleground. They were created by Shiva or Vishnu in one other again stories to kill these demons, Andaka, Asura, whoever. And they were kind of, you know, so these goddesses were actually ferocious goddesses, you know. They were created to destroy these demons. So whenever the Andaka was, that blood drop was falling on the ground, one Asura was born out of that rakta, you know, the blood. So it was beyond their, you know, kind of uncontrollable situation, because there are more Asuras were created from the blood drops of the Adhaka. So that is the time they created these goddesses. Actually, they were bloodthirsty, you know. They were started drinking this blood drops of Adhaka. By nature, they are not, but they became how they were, you know, produced when they became the bloodthirsty. That's why animal or sometimes human sacrifices in the old days, animal sacrifices are common, you know, offered to these goddesses. But how they are portrayed in the Brahmanical way, very benevolent and very compassionate and, you know, a subdued kind of status, you know. And they are also named after the male gods in any way. So Saptamatrika cult is the earliest cult of the Now the Chamunda, when I found out, Srishailam, apart from all this, Srishailam has a village goddess. After all, it was a village maybe to begin with. And most villages have their village goddess, and she is called Ankalamma, Ankali or Kali or Ankalamma, whatever, localized name. But actually, she is a Chamunda. When I saw that was her shrine originally, tree shrine, you know, some 15 years ago, Chamunda, alias and Ankalamma. And then when I went 5 years back, they took out that shrine is gone, and the Ankalamma is gone. The Chamunda statue was dumped somewhere in the, you know, somewhere there is a courtyard, you know. They find lot of these Naga stones, you know, it's very, you know, serpent cult, and, you know, very deep down there. So whenever they find sculptures, they create an island, you know, they created an island. So the Chamunda sculpture was dumped there. And I was searching, always I searched for the sculptures, old sculptures, and I found this sculpture, and I asked a staff member, and what is this sculpture? Oh, this is our Ankalamma, our village goddess. But why you dumped here her? Oh, we built a new temple for her, and we made a new statue of Ankalamma. So this is the way changes are taking place. So they build a new temple in the bazaar, and they created a new Ankalamma image, and they are decorated now Brahman sized. You can see the Puranic simplified form of worship is performed. New Ankalamma. So identity is gone in a way. And then on top of it, recently I found out she is decorated in the Shakambhari. Shakambhari is the goddess of vegetables and vegetarian goddess. Chamunda is, you know, bloodthirsty and sacrifice, goddess of sacrifices. So now what do you understand? I mean, these are the changes that are going on. So I am going to write one chapter about this whole story, and, you know, continuity, replacement, innovation and loss of identity. So when somebody goes today, there is no goddess, so you have a goddess here. But only old people know that, old timers, they know that the Kankarama is there. Actually, Chamunda looks like that. I mean, more ferocious. But Srishailam Chamunda was a little more benevolent, you know, not that. She always, you know, presented like a skeleton and with a skull cup, bloodthirsty, you know, like, you know, symbol of. And among all seven Matrikas, Chamunda is an independent goddess. She is not a consort of anybody, you know. So that is again another important thing. Anyway, the Shakta tradition, goddess Durga, other goddesses, earliest origins, you know, Durga also has her earliest origins, tribal Vamachara, and then she was became Mahadevi of Devi Mahatmya, and her scripture is almost, you know, included, in of course, different version, included into the Sanskrit text of Srishaila Kanda. Srishaila Kanda is a Mahatmya text of Srishailam, that is, you know, claimed to be the part of the Skanda Purana. And so, and in this process, whole, you know, the story, the journey of goddess Durga changes again. Southern transmission, I'm called now, convinced, and the cult of Vipra Sundari was incorporated by the Shankaracharyas of the Sringeri Kanchi. And she is now practices pretty much Smartha Brahmins are her priests, Smartha Pauranika, and goddess goddess scriptures are included, like Lalita Sahasranama and Devi Mahatma is chanted, and she has her own Vedic priests. So that is something interesting feature, you know. So she was looking like that. Actually, the original sculpture was like that. She was, and again I gave a detailed description why I am calling tribal, not rather conventional way, conventional goddess style, you know. She does not represent. That tells her earliest mountain goddess, you know. And then she was, you know, like this. Throughout the year, she was presented like that, a benevolent form, you know. Something Brahmanical authority have a fear of this fearsome, to deal with the fearsome aspects of either gods or anything. They have, somehow they make it Saumya and benevolent and Brahmaramba. And then Shankaracharya's established this Sri Chakra in the front of the shell, in the front of the Devi temple. So perform the Srividya type of worship is performed here. So this is again Sri Durga has again lot of history here changes with and Durga was perpetuated by this, you know, adepts or, you know, whether ascetics or, this is again another problem to call the yogis, ascetics, the siddhas, categories, establishing categories, another task. So you can see that he is meditating on goddess. We don't know what technique he is using, but it's a difficult posture. He is basically, his posture is on the yoga danda. It's sitting on the yoga danda. How difficult that is. But he is perfectly balanced there. And on the other hand, Bhairava is, again, deity, whatever the snakes covered deity, here goddess, again, you know. But Bhairava's for siddhis, you know, supernatural powers, astra siddhis, they used to perpetuate this goddess. That is where the yogini cult, you know, developed and okay, so, tantric practices, different meditation, and yoga techniques. Finally, I'm convinced these techniques are, because based on the literature found in the Sanskrit and Telugu sources, and also, inscriptions to some extent. Mantra yoga was practiced, Kundalini, mystical physiology. Laya yoga was practiced, Raja yoga, definitely. That is the Patanjali yoga, eight limbs of yoga. And Atta yoga, tremendous variety of Atta yoga portraiture is there. That is my fourth lecture, you know, Natha yogis and Atta yoga. And Bhakti yoga, of course, you know, all these, you know, I'm convinced, and so there will be a chapter on the different meditation. And I will run through like mantra yoga, mantra chanting with meditation for siddhis or for whatever purpose. You can see the man holding the index finger and the mantra chanting. And here, meditating yogis, half lotus or siddhasana posture. And this Sri Parvata is known to be a very ascetic and siddha yogis, you know, severe austerities performed. Old-time tapasic austerities, ascetic practice are practiced. So now the Laya Yoga, I'm convincing because of the Shaiva Siddhanta, this lotus circumambulation, again Parvata's internal meditation, he visualizes whole lotus, Shiva, Sadashiva, with him in his mental worship, you know, visualization. There are the lotus yantras there, ascetics meditating on the lotus yantras. They don't need to do this tedious journey, repeating this 8-petal journey, you know, coming to the center and covering the 1 petal, the doorway, and coming to the center 8 times, means 16 times. So at one point, I think, you know, a mental journey that is common in the other tradition too. More convincingly, this yantra with the Bija syllables and of deity, I'm thinking of Shiva Shakti. I don't know, I mean, right now, but it is found. There are monasteries. There are so many monasteries, but right now, Panchamatas, 5 monasteries are there. This comes from the Vibhuti Mata. That is actually belongs to right where in the center. So this is a yantra. Different meditation methods you can see. Yantra charts, yogis. And this one I am kind of Shambhava Mudra leading to. Yogini gazes up outward. And I have another image I couldn't find in my here. So he is actually gazing into the void, voidness, you know, into the empty space. She is a Karakkamma Ammal from the Tamil Nayanar saints, one of the saints. So that tells us the Tamil connections with the Sri Parvata. Enormous, you know, you can see Kapalika sitting with the trident and the young yantra, and adeptly with the yoga patta. They use the yoga pattas and to maintain the postures, yoga dandas. And this guy here, he is to develop the ekagrata, maybe he is focusing is on his some object is there. I don't know what it is, but he is develop the concentration, maybe. Not only this, apart from siddhas by themselves, they are engaged with the lay followers in different ways, you know. You can see that, you know. And this is another Shaiva ascetics seated on the spiked seat, and all kinds of practices were there. And so this is the last, you know. So this is the last slide. Now we looking at back and what is happened in the Sri Parvata. You see now how Bhairava is worshipped. More Brahman says the Bhairava. You know, there is no relationship with what we saw the Bhairava earlier, Bhairava. And Bhairava is brought into the Brahmanical fold, worshipped regularly any other deity. Veerabhadra is installed next to the Mallikarjuna shrine. Veerabhadra Bhadrakali there. All the practices of what we see. There is a continuation that we see, but lot of changes. And these guys are Veerashaiva practitioners. They come to Srishailam every year during the Shivaratri festival. And I met this guy, you know, some years ago. He was making a journey to all 12 Jyotirlingas. And I asked him which school. He said, is there some Akara? Maybe Pashupata. I don't know. I couldn't figure it out. Maybe. In Pashupatas, they roll like this, you know. But it's difficult to say. Maybe not a yogi, I don't know. But you can see the ashes, cover his body. So anyway, this is the story of Srishailam. My main task now remained is that last page. I have to look at now textual traditions, Sanskrit textual traditions, to place this either practices or religious history in the larger context. So that is what my major task remained here, to explore textual primary sources pertaining to Shaiva and Shaiva Shakta traditions, and looking at something Brahmayamala is so much influenced with Southern texts are there. Maybe one channel to look at it to understand Bhairava or Shakti oriented goddesses, or you know, and the Kubjika Pachinaya, that is also important for me right now thinking. And Dakshinaya, the Shiva, to understand the how far the Shiva Sri Vidya cult was incorporated, and look at other shrines also, see that what is going on at other sites. And apart from that, Puranas gave a lot of information on the yogas and the mental worship. A lot. Linga Purana, recently I was reading something. I found very important information. So that is my task remained to explore, you know, and place this tantras, siddhas, and yoga traditions within the larger context, at least, you know. So that's it. Okay.
So we have.